Okay, so what I will talk about today is the geodesic active contour method, and let me just give you, now it would be a little bit more than that. I will show you that the geodesic active contour is something, it's just one of a very large family. In fact, if I have an image, and let's think about a one-dimensional image, okay, so this is my signal. This is the object, this is the background, or vice versa. And I would like to segment, to isolate, to split the domain into a background and foreground object. The question is, what would be the simplest way to do that? Okay, so the simplest way to do that, I mean, if I give it to an undergraduate student, would probably be just thresholding, okay? If this is C1 and this is the level C2, then just divide by 2 and you find the separation set between the two. You can write it in a more complicated fashion. Let me show you how you can write it. So assume that this is I, okay? This is the x-axis and this is I of x. Then what I can do is optimize, I mean, find the curve such that inside your curve, the image intensity is as close as possible to C1. And then the rest of the domain should be as close as possible to C2. Okay, just optimize for the boundary between these two objects, and what you get is exactly, I mean, the Euler-Lagrange equation of the curve that separates the two objects would just be I minus C1 plus C2 divided by 2 times the difference between the two constants. So this is a variational approach to thresholding. Now, you would like, in some cases, to regularize the boundary between these objects. And then you add this epsilon time the arc length of the boundary of omega c. And this is known as the Chan-Vezier or simplified Manfort-Chao, whatever. But this is, you can plug here some function that would penalize the edginess of the object. And this is where geodesic active contour is coming into play. But let's go back in time to the early 80s, where people try to analyze where edges are in an image from a different point of view. This is called edge detection, and then edge and what we do here is, in a sense, edge integration, because we integrate all the hints about where the boundary is into a solid curve, into a continuous curve. So again, I have my image, and as I told you yesterday, so this is I of x. The first derivative would be the first derivative of I of x. The second, in order to find where the local maximum is, I would like to take the second derivative. So this is the Laplacian of the one-dimensional image, and I'm searching for the zero crossing of the Laplacian. So we started by thresholding the image, intersection of two sets. That led me to a very accurate positioning of where the edge is. And then there is the more complicated approach of taking the second derivative in order to find where the local edge is. In two dimensions, asking where the zero crossings of the Laplacian are is known as the Mar and Hildreth edge detector. Okay, and it's a classical edge detector, Laplacian of Gaussian, it is called, because you smooth a little bit the image before you take the Laplacian. But would this be the best way to do in 2D? Apparently, there have been a little bit better. I think that Haralick was the first to notice that if you look at the level sets, at the contours of the image, and you take the second order derivative along the gradient direction, so psi here is the gradient direction, then you get better localization of the edges. In fact, the very celebrated Kenny edge detector does exactly that. This is the core of the Kenny edge detector. There are some other things in the Kenny edge detector. There is some hysteresis process that is going on when trying to tile these hints together, these edges together. But The reason it is called Kenny Agitator, because Kenny gave some optimization criteria according to which, I mean, a one-dimensional analysis, according to which taking the second derivative along one dimension should provide you something which is optimal in some sense. What I will show you today is there is a different explanation to why the so-called Kenny, the Haralick edge detector, works better than the Mar and Hilbert edge detector. When you understand that, you can start designing your own edge detectors. I mean, you can start finding whatever you like about edges and be more clever about what you do. So there is one important result that I would like to say before I start showing you some pictures, and this is the following result. I showed you yesterday the Iconal equation. Okay, so the Iconal equation was a gradient of t, was solving the equation gradient of t equal to some function g of x and y, x, y, and z, whatever. Okay. And we solve the Iconal equation between two points. We solve the Iconal equation, and then flowing on the gradients of the function that we get, we can extract minimal geodesics. At the other end, I told you that minimizing, finding a curve along which some g function is minimized, provide some Euler-Lagrange equation, and we wrote this Euler-Lagrange equation explicitly. This is the normal to the curve, should be equal to zero. Then what is the relation between the two? If it's obvious to you that this equation, the minimal geodesic of this equation, actually satisfy this condition along the curve, then I could stop here. Nevertheless, the proof is so nice and simple that I would show that. So this is the Euler-Lagrange equation. And what I will show is the following lemma. The flow lines that are defined as, let's define it by the following PD, the following ODE, C of P equals to gradient of T, where gradient of t is exactly the solution to the Iconal equation that is written over there. They satisfy the Euler-Lagrange equation of integration of g ds. Okay. And the proof is so trivial, so let's use it. So we have here the Euler-Lagrange equation of this guy. So what we need to do is basically write the following. So the proof is trivial, so I will show it. This is also known as the Bellman principle and some other stuff. But we know that the curvature in the normal direction is nothing but the second derivative according to the arc length. And therefore, what we know is let's take the derivative. So this is the derivative of the tangent, and the tangent is nothing but what is written here. It is in fact the normalized tangent. So I can plug it here. Okay? So now let's write it explicitly, and then push the derivative according to S inside. So I take the gradient of the first component, T of X, dot product that we see S. And the same should go for the second component, gradient of ty divided by the normalized gradient, dot producted with cs. Okay? Now I continue to plug. Now what is cs? Cs is nothing but, again, the gradient, the normalized gradient. So I can plug it in. So I have the time. So basically what I have done here is replaced everything. Not everything yet. I need still to use the following connection. So I'm using this connection in order to replace gradient of t magnitude with g. I'm using the fact that the gradient of gradient of t could be replaced by gradient of g, okay, because this is what is written here, and the fact that the normal can be written I can pack it back as Ty minus Tx divided by gradient of T. So if I push all these terms, I mean 1, 2, and 3, into this equation, what I get at the end is that I get equality to gradient of G dot the normal direction divided by the by G and everything in the normal direction, which actually concludes the proof. So the minimal geodesics produced by the iconal equations in fact satisfy what we know as the geodesic active contour equation. Okay, so when we understand that, let me show you some nice pictures and how everything falls together into place. So let me just so going back to the to history, there are these when we're talking about edges, there are two processes. One of them is detecting the edges. Find the some hints, we call them edgelets or something like that, where there is a suspected edge. Okay, so but these hints could be changing gradient of the image, I mean the magnitude, and also the orientation. And here we didn't use the orientation. And obviously using the orientation should provide better results, especially if the level of noise is relatively small. Then there is a second process. People were trying to take all these hints about edges and integrate them into something useful, into meaningful boundaries between objects. We call this edge integration. Can we take these two together? The answer is yes. So again, historically, Sobel and others searched for where the change in the intensity is the largest. Then Maren Hildreth talked about taking the zero crossings of the Laplacian. I talked about it before. And eventually, the most sophisticated or the most common edges that people are using is basically taking the second derivative along the gradient direction and asking where it is equal to zero. Okay, and the claim is that such a edge detector, this IXIXI equal to zero, provides better results than the Laplacian equal to zero. You can have the sense of why it is better. I mean, just think about the fact that Laplacian is a rotation invariant operator, and therefore it can be decomposed into a tangential component and a normal component, and therefore this is where we get this nice property from. But let's work with that. So this is called the Harelic edge detector or the Kenny edge detector, and people were trying to integrate all these edge detectors, all these edge hints into meaningful boundaries, and there are many papers along various ways to do that. Okay, what is the new wave? Now this is not so much of a new now, started about 10 years ago, even more than that. Given an image, compute an edge indicator function. For example, some inverse function of the gradient of the image. Okay, this is a hint of where the edges are. The next step would be integrating these edges by just finding the curve that minimizes the edgeness hints along these curves. Okay, so you're trying to find some edge along which this G function is minimized. So if intensity here corresponds to the value of G, then we are trying to find curves that would follow the black line the best way we can. And obviously there is a heroic history behind that. Witkin, Kass, and Torzopoulos introduced non-geometric ways of segmenting objects. Kasselis and Maladi, two different groups, noticed that there is no geometry in this kind of segmenter, so they just introduced an evolution equation that looked like that, curvature plus some constant in the normal direction. And the G function was actually this constant, G function was actually appearing here. It was not a result of any minimization process, although now we know that it does minimize something. This part minimizing weighted area and this one minimizing length, But still, the idea of introducing something which is geometric rather than non-geometric was appealing. And actually, the moment I saw that I wrote a short note about it, we kept it in a drawer for a couple of years. I mean, we gave it to a couple of people. And in 95, we published that and we called it, I mean, I thought it was unworthy of publishing, the geodesic active contour, and this is why we kept it in the drawer. Eventually we published it, and this is my most cited paper for some reason. It's the geodesic active contour, and the idea was to combine the variational approach that Orzopoulos, Witkin, and Kass used, as well as the geometrical sense that Kasseles and Malady apply to this problem. We implemented it initially using Levesset's method that goes back many years ago. There are fast approaches to implement it. I will talk a little bit about these fast approaches. Then there is this notion of using the gradient. I mean, why should we give why should we ignore the fact that there are gradients in the image when we are developing these active contours that are trying to integrate the objects and isolate them from the boundary? So the first to notice that there is something, I mean, the first to say that, look, we need to look at the gradients in the modern sense, where people like Paragios, Unser had a fairly early paper about it, Xu and Prince used something like that. And they come up to this approach from an intuitive point of view. The variational approach to that was first done by Vasilevsky and Siddiqui, and soon after we realized that there is something in that, and you can actually explain the harmonic edge detector from a variational point of view. And this is the interesting thing in this talk that I would like to compare. So what is segmentation? Given an image, we would like to isolate something from this image. In this case, prior is very important. I mean, the fact that we know somebody sees something in this image? A leopard. A dog. So there is a Dalmatian in this image. So now I gave you a hint towards the prior. So it's a dog drinking something. So this is the head of the dog, and he's drinking from a small pond here or something like that. So those of you who are used to Dalmatians should see it here. Otherwise, I mean, so there is a dog over there. And the question, and in this case, I gave you prior knowledge. I mean, and you actually used your prior knowledge of what is a dog in order to aggregate all these spots into something meaningful. You can play tricks with the mind, but it's also very useful. I mean, a physician that is looking at such an ultrasound image would like to say that there is a fetus here, and the measure of the fetus is normal or it's not normal, it develops or not develops. And the way that you would like the physician to get to the conclusion there is something here is by allowing him or her to mark something, some initial contour about this fetus, and let it shrink so that it captures the vital information at the end. So we would like to do something automatic that would do would solve such problems. And again, this is a famous sequence of pictures by Babe Doolittle. You know what a horse is, and therefore you are able to isolate these ponies, these pintos, out of the background. And we would like to do it automatically. Yet another example, probably taken from Canada, in which case you have these relatively noisy images, and your knowledge of what is a horse and what is an Indian would allow you to extract the vital information out of the background. We would like to do the same for medical images. For example, in this case, there is a tumor in the brain. This is a CT scan of the brain, and we would like to be able to measure it, to measure its exact quantities, its where the boundaries are, and again, starting from some initial contour, allow this contour to propagate and oscillate the boundary of the object. Yet again, an example of Babe Doolittle, one of Babe Doolittle's images. You can see anything beyond two horses and a cowboy here? Faces. Again? So there are 13 of those. So now let me give you some initial conditions in order to fix your perception of what is going on here. There are about 13 faces here. And once you lock onto them, you cannot lose them. I mean, your brain is so trained to isolate faces from the background, so that actually prior knowledge helps a lot. And the question is, what can we do with prior knowledge? And yet another example, faces hidden in an image. We would like to do the same, to start from these two points and isolate these two tools, or from a boundary that encapsulate both of them and let it propagate until it locks onto the boundaries of the objects. Okay, we would like to, so I gave you very sophisticated images, and eventually we do very simple things. I mean, we work on very simple things. But the question then is, what does the prior help us with? And the question is, and the answer is that with a good prior, you actually don't need the data. Okay, and let me give you some examples in which our prior leads us to some weird assumptions of what is going on. You know what that? This is a pacifier, yeah. This is a pacifier, and our brain tells us that this is something else initially. And this is the same kid after a couple of years. What's that? This is a very nice dog, and when you see it from the other direction. So again, wrong prior, wrong initial conditions can lead us to wrong assumptions about what we are looking at, about what we are seeing. But still, we would like to somehow encapsulate the prior knowledge and the initial conditions so that they would eventually lead us to interesting and informative conclusions. So we already talked about parameterized curves. We talked about what is the curvature, we talked about what is the tangent. These are things that should be by now obvious to all those who forgot about differential geometry. We talked about Euler-Lagrange equations. So we have some functional of the curve. So in this case, I'm showing, I'm presenting functionals of a curve, and the Euler-Lagrange equations are giving as such. Okay? So now we apply this machinery, for example, to the arc length of a curve. And according to Grayson's theorem, any non-convex curve, first of all, becomes convex. And then according to the Gage and Hamilton theory, it converges, it disappears at a point after a time, which is proportional to the volume, to the area inside the curve. So all these should be known by now. What is going on with images? So assume that we have the following simple image. We have two objects and a black background. And if we take one line in this image and plot it as a function, what we see is the following profile of the function. Okay, so this would be the background and this would be the object of the image. Now let's do things slowly. First of all, let's compute an edge indicator function, g of x, for example, like 1 over the gradient magnitude of the image. And you get the following potential function, okay? So this would be g of x. This would be one line across g of x. These two valleys would be nothing but the boundaries of this function, of this object. So what we would like to do is to fit a curve into these valleys so that it would integrate g at its lowest values. Okay? So first of all, let's go to the classic snake approach. The classical snake approach optimized the functional that has been written at the top. Why is it not geometric? It's not geometric because if you think about it, it's not reparametrization invariant. If you change from P to R, you will get a different functional. I will show you in a moment that there is a very nice relation between these kind of non-geometric measures and geometric ones. It's actually, the relation is through Papatouille's principle.